Looking to start a podcast but don't know where to begin? Look no further. The team at Dodge Media Productions has 20 years of experience as podcast listeners and observing the industry and 8 years experience in podcast production. We can help you take your podcast from idea to fruition and we'll make the process seamless and easy. We'll help you with everything from recording and editing to hitting the charts on Apple Podcasts. So what are you waiting for? Contact us today and let's get started. DodgeMediaProductions.com.
You're listening to Dodge Movie Podcast. Your hosts are Christy and Mike Dodge, the founders of Dodge Media Productions. We produce films and podcasts, so this is a podcast about films. Join them as they share their passion for filmmaking.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Dodge Movie Podcast. This is episode 162, and we will be talking about the 2005 film Walk the Line, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Goodwin, Robert Patrick, Shooter, and Shooter Jennings, Waylon Jennings' son, portrays an older Waylon, or a younger. The director for this film is James Mangold, and he also did 1997's Copland, 1999's Girl Interrupted, 2007's 310 to Yuma, the 2013 version of The Wolverine, and then followed it up with Logan in 2017. And the book is based on Johnny Cash's book of the same name. And Gil Dennis did, maybe the screenplay. And James Mangold was Gil Dennis's teacher in film school.
Wow, it's great when a professor and their student get together and work.
Isn't it fantastic?
It really is. Yeah.
It's symbiotic, but it's wonderful for the student. Right. I will say that.
Right. Did Mangold also direct the last Indiana Jones movie, perhaps?
Possibly. Wow. I try to do my best to hit like the highlights, but I only have so much space in my little form that I use. Do you want me to look it up?
Listeners, fans, super fans, this is an exercise left for the student is to figure that out. But
okay, I can always put it in the show notes as well.
Right, IMDb will tell.
Yes. The DP on this was Paydon, maybe? P-H-E-D-O-N.
P-H-E-D-O-N.
Paydon, maybe? Maybe another.
Paydon?
Paydon Papa Michael.
Oh.
I like that last name. He's got a name,
yeah.
That's what our grandkids could call you, Papa Michael.
Oh, you're right. That's true. That's a pretty good one.
And he has had a huge career running the gambit. So one of his first films was 1993's Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings, man.
And then in 96, he did Biodome, another big favorite of yours.
So he started out more in a comic oeuvre.
Uh-huh. Then moved a little more serious in 1998. Patch Adams, 2004 Sideways, which is a huge, big hit.
Both of those are kind of comedic still.
Okay, yeah, you're right. But start more
drama.
He's starting
to steer toward the drama.
Okay, we do some serious drama in 2006, Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
2011 with The Descendants.
Okay, yeah, he's going deep.
Oscar
bait.
Yeah. 2013, Nebraska.
Okay.
And to top it off, in 2019, Ford v. Ferrari.
Oh,
I know.
Right? That's pretty good.
Good job, Papa Michael.
Yeah, Papa Michael. So it's funny that when you first said that, I was thinking French for some reason. And then when you said Cool Runnings, man, there was some French colonies in the Caribbean. And so perhaps he does come from down there.
Who knows? Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I will try to do a deep dive. And
he's welcome to call in and tell us how to pronounce his name and tell us where he comes from.
Please, Papa Michael. Please call in. Faden Papa Michael. I just love saying that. Okay, let's move on. The synopsis for this film, a chronicle of a country music legend, Johnny Cash's life from his early days on an Arkansas cotton farm to his rise to fame with Sun Records in Memphis, where he recorded alongside Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins.
I didn't know he was an Arkansasian.
Yeah.
That would explain the dirt poor part of his childhood.
Right. The tagline for this film is, love is a burning thing.
Oh. Huh.
I think that's a line from his song, Ring of Fire.
Right, but there's no way they could work his most famous song, book title, and title of the movie into the tagline?
I agree.
All right.
I agree. Okay. Johnny Cash approved Joaquin Phoenix to play him in this film because he liked his performance in Gladiator. And June Carter Cash also approved Reese portraying her in the film.
Okay, so casting and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I felt like when I first heard Joaquin Phoenix as Johnny Cash, I was kind of like, I don't really see it. But credit to Mr. Phoenix that I felt like at several points in the film on close-ups, his expression on his face matched. And I think their facial structure was maybe a little different, vaguely similar square face, but he got the expression that was really well done. Not as much for Reese Witherspoon. Now, to be fair, I knew June Carter Cash later in her life, but I did look up some photos of earlier in her career, and I wouldn't say that I got as strong a sense of that capturing the performance from Ms. Witherspoon.
I think definitely, I was going to say for both Joaquin portraying Johnny and Reese portraying June, if you look back at those early footage of when they were on stage together at the Grand Ole Opry, Reese definitely did a good job getting mannerisms, the dance move kind of, and how she, and then how they would kind of play to one another and kind of banter, that they had on stage. I think they did a really good job. And while Joaquin is 5'8" and Johnny was 6'2", I think also, once again, if you look back at early Johnny Cash, they definitely, kudos to hair and makeup, because they nailed how he looked as a very young man.
And that's interesting because Joaquin being six inches shorter than Johnny puts him closer, because June Carter Cash is taller than Reese Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. Reese is a little shorter side. Mm-hmm, so, okay, that's fair. I think I really saw a lot of Johnny Cash performing. I don't think I saw as much of June Carter at that era. So not to besmirch her, but more just credit to Joaquin Phoenix, because I felt like the initial casting, I wasn't like leaping out of my seat. But then when I watched the film, I was really impressed. And you had said that they did their own singing, and that impressed me even more. But so a real credit to him for that. I really was impressed with his performance.
Yes. It was very good. Why don't you kick us off with your pickup line for this film, and then we can get into the meat of the film.
Mr. Cash? The warden is saying this when he's in the wood shop right before the Folsom Prison concert performance. So that's kind of, in a sense, a flash forward, but then they flash back and they you know, then move all the way through there. I thought it pretty good, because it is a film about Mr. Cash.
Yeah.
And the question mark. What about Mr. Cash?
Oh, good.
So, works okay. So
it connects with your theory.
It does.
That the first line kind of explains and
tease up the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. So, like you mentioned earlier, I think they had very different upbringings, June and Johnny.
Yeah.
Because her family was like country music royalty.
Right.
And because they were so successful, I'm sure that, you know, even socioeconomically, you know, clearly it was different.
Right. So he was born, what, 19, 20 or 30, somewhere in there? Because he, well, maybe in the 30s, because he went, I thought, to Korea in the military. Depression era Arkansas on a farm. Mm-hmm. Right. He was awfully ridiculously poor. Mm. And as often happens with poverty, they were awfully religious. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we see early on that, you know, he learned the church hymns with his mother. And so one of the trivia bits that I read somewhere is he's one of the few people that are in both the Country Hall of Fame and the Gospel Hall of Fame.
Mm.
And so a la Elvis, who, right, he meets in this film, right? Probably a similar thing, right? They have that strong background musical. And in fact, there's a point later in the film where I think it's June's mom refers to shape notes. Had you ever heard this phrase before? Mm-mm. I hadn't either. But apparently it was a way to draw the notes as different shapes so people didn't have to learn the musical signature with the you know, a C note is on the bottom line, and you know, so there were different shapes. So It was a correlation of do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. And each one of those is a shape, so you could learn the song. Again, stuff I didn't know, but apparently that's very common in that era for hymnals to help everybody sing.
Interesting.
In that, so I learned a fact from this film.
You love learning.
Oh, I do learn. Love learning stuff.
His life was, I'll say, tinged or tarnished with a very traumatic event. And it seemed that there was even some favoritism
already in the family.
He lost a brother in a horrible accident. And it seemed that, I think the dad even says something horrible at one point, like the wrong one died.
Yeah, he said the wrong one died.
Oh.
By the way, credit to Mangold. I do have a few nits to pick with him as a director, but on this one, he communicated the tragedy without showing it to us.
Yes.
So as a viewer, you understand the trauma without having to go through it. And I appreciate that.
I do too. And I think, our imagination probably,
Sure.
Makes it
worse than it maybe could have been, but yeah. I don't have that image in my head. So thank you, Mr. Mangold.
Yes. No, that was tough. And it was showing the family picking cotton in the fields.
Right.
And when I watch people pick cotton, it's got to be one of the most difficult things. So, a crop to harvest.
Does cotton grow and get ready for harvest any place that's not incredibly hot and humid? It always looks to be blisteringly hot and miserable, stooped over work. So speaking of the South, some folks would call it day you're stupid, like stooped over, but pronounce it like you're stupid.
But is that where it comes from?
I don't think
the etymology of stupid?
I actually don't know. We're going to need to consult a super fan on this one, but...
Or no, you will not wait for a super fan. Let's be real. You will be looking this up while I'm prepping dinner later tonight.
You're not wrong.
Let's be honest.
But I like also from the category of show don't tell, where when Johnny is getting ready to catch the bus to go off to, I think he goes directly to the service at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And how his father basically doesn't even say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a jerk. He's like, you're going to miss your bus.
I know. And this could be the last time you're ever going to see your son.
Right.
And he's going off and fighting for the country. So
right.
You should be super grateful and proud of him.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, at that time, that was probably also a way to physically get out of that area.
Yeah.
Right. Because you couldn't afford a plane ticket to Las Vegas on your own. But they showed that character, right? What could be a more touching moment than when your son goes off to join the army and you're like, you're going to miss your bus.
Yeah.
I think the actor was Robert Patrick who played his dad, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Credit to him because I hated that character.
Yes, yes.
And if I hadn't seen that actor in another movie,
You
might get Bradley Cooper. He did such a good job. I hated that character.
I was watching that and I was like, he often plays kind of a tough guy.
He does have a tough guy, yeah.
Because isn't he known for a Terminator?
Yeah, Terminator 2 is where I first really knew his name.
Yeah.
And he played the liquid metal guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, had the crew cut, but super intense.
Mm-hmm.
So he does that well. But I was just so impressed with how much I hated the character. He did a fantastic job of being hated.
I know. I was watching it and I was thinking, I've heard actresses say that sometimes it's fun to play the villain and actors
too.
Because it's fun to kind of exercise that bitchy side of you. That sometimes would maybe like to say the thing that's on the tip of our tongues, but we hold it back for social decency. And so I think I've heard them say it's mm-hmm. fun to be that character. But to be this type of a dad that is just so cruel to and I hear actors talk about, the process you've got to learn. And so that's probably what he did is this man probably did not have a great upbringing either. He probably didn't mm-hmm. have touchy feely parents that made sure that he felt you know, self-confident and everything. And so that's why he's taking it out on at least one of his children. But he wasn't kind to his wife either. But kudos to Robert Patrick for playing such a jerky character.
Right. I wanted to say the actor's name is Michael Calabro. He was on Melrose Place. Mm-hmm. And he played the villain, but that looked fun because it was like over the top.
Mustache
like you said,
twirling,
he would,
kind of.
Yeah, he would say the things you ought not say. He would take the biggest piece of cake and those things. That I could see kind of being fun.
Being fun, yeah.
Patrick's turn here, this guy, ooh, like that's, and like I said.
How does that not seep in your brain?
Well, and the other people, the cast and crew and everything. So credit to him. To do that, because I don't know if many of us could withstand that withering hatred from everyone around you.
Especially when you're dealing with we're getting off topic, but...
Well, it's on topic.
You're dealing with children, and so it would be so... And I've heard of actors who have had to play kind of with children, and they run over right away, and they're like, okay, we're still friends, right? Like, that was just playing, right? You know, like, it is hard, because it... At a baseline, that still is another human being. And if you're speaking, you know, just really aggressively or angrily towards another human being, it's tough.
There's a trivia item about Gene Wilder and Willy Wonka. And I think it was like they didn't tell the kid playing Charlie that he was going to flip out so they'd get a real reaction. And I don't know if Gene was traumatized by that, but I couldn't do that.
Right.
But also, I'm just thinking, you know, obviously Robert Patrick has a career.
Yeah.
But, you know, if people haven't seen you in anything else, do they now associate your face with that?
Stereotype.
So,
typecasting.
But it also, I think narratively, it sets up the tension of why Johnny Cash was kind of the way he was, in a sense, not just the trauma plus genetics equals addiction, but also his drive to sing that his father didn't like him because he was musical, right? And we, of course, look back on that saying, this is a Hall of Fame musician. Yes. How could you not be proud of this? And I would say, you know, Johnny Cash, Dolly Parton, they're both like, you know, top tier deities in that world. And to think that, you know, your father would be like, eh.
Well, and even that scene later with the tractor.
At the lake.
And that could be a case of his father wasn't proud of him because was he trying to one-up him and he is trying to show that he has made more money than me. You know, like there could be a bunch of issues there. Yeah. And so his father is still needling him and Johnny is still affected by it.
Right.
Like you don't stop being your parents' child, even if you're an adult and you can sell out concert halls and you probably make... You know, more in a year your dad made in his whole life.
He was, I think for his time, just ridiculously wealthy, but compared to what he came from, sure. And from a narrative perspective, I don't know the actual details of Johnny's life, but if it's based on his book, presumably that happened. But showing that scene, right, it's great because you have her family as a counterpoint to his family, right? So, in case the viewer wasn't following along at home, you show kind of the difference in how her mom's trying to like, okay, let's, you know, you know, and then
her family was the epitome of like wholesome of that day.
Right. Which, by the way, I also want to throw in there. I like it when later he's trying to a cold turkey detox there at the house and the drug dealer shows up and the dad runs out with the double barreled shotgun. But the part I love best is mom comes out with a pump.
Yeah.
So it shows you a couple things. First of all, I love that mom's got her own shotgun.
Yeah.
And secondly, she's smart because she's got more rounds to play with.
Well, and I loved her family, especially coming from where, and I said they were wholesome. They could have turned their back on him.
Sure, because he's a drug addict.
Right. And he's tarnishing,
and
you know.
And a philanderer.
Yes. And they didn't. They brought him into the fold. They made him one of their own and protected him and tried to help him get better, which was very admirable.
And so I give credit to the director and actors for this because they didn't come across saccharine, right? It was very believable, right? And you could kind of see, well, oh, that's where we got June, right? She mm-hmm. matched the family. Mm-hmm. You could kind of see that.
But you did kind of wonder, I mean, at least I did throughout the movie, like, why did she stay with him? Because she yeah. could have had anybody. I saw what the attraction was for him to her, but I never really could figure out the opposite way.
Yeah, well, some people do like a bad boy. others like to fix people,
yeah.
a project. Or it's just, you know, chemistry. No, you can't.
There
can't
must
really explain
have been
it.
Something. There right? must have been something. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I felt like it was a classic story of, you know, the rock star that kind of flew too close to the sun.
Sure.
You know, like yeah. he. But like you said, we can't really discount his upbringing and, like you said, genetics plus trauma. Despite what was depicted in the movie, Johnny Cash actually had a drug problem throughout his entire adult life, going only a few years in between without taking drugs. And so I didn't really feel like these characters changed a whole lot. I mean, he was pretty much a drunk and abusive and...
Well, in the film, as a character arc in the film, he cleans up at the end. So you could say that, but I don't think that, yeah, I don't think that was necessarily strictly true. I found a quote from Waylon Jennings that said basically there was rampant drug use in Nashville in that era.
Right, which, you know, I think I kind of grew up, that was only rock and roll that had that.
Right, exactly. But, yeah. You didn't think the country guys were
But of course they would, right? Why wouldn't they?
Right.
Because
right.
we know, like, you know, I think of like the payola schemes, you know, like they right. they would go into radio stations, and I know oh, yeah. they did it in the country western stations too, and they would bribe the radio DJs with money and coke uh-huh. to play certain artists'
sure, certain
records.
Times, yeah.
So if the radio DJs are doing it, why wouldn't?
It's obviously available.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
you know, they had the money and it was the lifestyle. And you think back, like, you know, I'm thinking like Judy Garland, they would, I think all entertainment back the 40s to... I mean, possibly now, but definitely the 40s through the 70s and 80s and 90s, there it was like you did uppers so that you could perform
right.
and then so that you could sleep,
downers,
you were drinking
yeah.
yourself into a stupor and, right. you know, oh, and then rinse and repeat the next day so that you could perform. Right. I mean, when we did the Rose, that's kind of like
sure.
what she was yeah. doing. And, you know, so this has come up before and this isn't a new story for
right.
a performer.
And this may have been challenging for hair and makeup because there was a whole lot of slut gloss on Joaquin as he was playing the drug-addled Johnny Cash.
Well, now you have to explain what you mean by slut gloss.
Oh, we already
well,
covered
know,
this.
But for somebody who hasn't listened, because that was a while ago.
Okay, as a reminder, when we were shooting Second Story, the hair and makeup person was putting on lip gloss to represent sweat. It's often used for sweat because it doesn't evaporate and it holds its form. And I believe she said sweat gloss, but someone, probably me,
yes,
misheard
you.
It as slut gloss.
And then you got a kick out of it.
I
and
got
you
the
got
giggles.
Tickled.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you call it slut gloss all the time.
Yes.
But I just want people to understand what you're talking about.
Right. So if on the podcast there's something that's confusing, it's me. That's the reason.
In the scene where Johnny Cash is kind of throwing a toddler tantrum, as we call them, and
yeah.
he pulls the sink off the wall, that was not scripted. Joaquin just pulled that sink off the wall. So, wow, that's some rage.
So, credit to him, because I have not pulled a sink off the wall, but my guess is the plumbers work hard to make them not come off the wall,
right?
Right? And then when you said that, the first thing I thought of was the scene in Liar Liar when Jim Carrey flips out in the bathroom and apparently he hits his head on the sink and he really did it.
Oh my gosh.
He committed to the joke.
Yikes.
So credit to Mr. Phoenix for just ripping it off the wall, not hitting it with his head. I mean, that you at least get a second take that way. Although, again, were the props people like, he did what?
Yeah. We now have to, that's a one take right
yeah.
there.
God damn it.
According to James Mangold, when Joaquin Phoenix was learning how to sing and playing the guitar like Johnny Cash, his voice was way too high, and the band learned how to play Cash's songs in a higher key. Just before filming, Joaquin dropped closer to John's level, and the band had to retune their instruments to perform in the original key. So for the Folsom prison sequence, Joaquin insisted that the crew members playing the wardens don't let the extras playing the inmates eat, drink, or go to the toilet to help create a tense atmosphere on the set.
That's fascinating. I'm curious what the casting was like for the extras at Folsom Prison. One thing that I noticed, perhaps this goes in costumery, is back then they had the Jay Leno look for prisoners.
Yes, yes.
No orange jumpsuits at that time.
Mm-mm. Every day before filming began, Joaquin would walk up to James Mangold and tell him, "Say that thing." And Mangold would reply, "You're not Johnny Cash." This made Phoenix happy as it elevated him to the weight of expectations about playing the icon. So he very much kind of needed some mental stuff. The fact that he projected kind of what the inmates needed, and then having... That's interesting because that would not help me. So it sounds like he kind of needs someone to doubt him so that he can fight against that and to prove, no, I am Johnny Cash. Like, you know, whereas I would need a director to be like, you got this. I know you can do this.
In the parlance of needing a kick or a cuddle, he needs a kick.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Do you think maybe Mangold slapped him at any point before a take? Take that.
He got took a page from William Friedkin's book. Yeah,
the old Friedkin slap.
Oof. Okay, under historical context or cultural relevance, I have when James Mangold asked Johnny Cash what his favorite film was, the singer replied, Frankenstein. And I thought this was very, is it prophetic?
Prophetic, probably.
Because it's about a man made up of these bad parts, and yet he still tries to do something decent and be someone decent. Right.
And he's also tall and wears all black.
Right. So I think, I mean, the Johnny Cash that I feel like we knew in our day was a soft-spoken, gentle-sounding man. So I'm...
Yeah.
And, you know, when we see in the film him portrayed as a boy, he was also kind of like, you know, which is maybe one of the reasons his dad was frustrated with him, because he was soft. He was, you know, I mean,
artistic temperament.
Yeah. And so maybe he was that way all along, but there was something in.
Well, one might argue that if the drug use, and I think a substantial amount of it was painkillers, was numbing, that he was perhaps a sensitive fellow.
He didn't witness what happened to his brother, but he obviously, him and his brother were very close.
Right, sure.
And so that would have just destroyed a little kid, especially if your family didn't handle it well then afterwards.
Yeah, as you said that, immediately I was thinking, oh, well, the brother could be the preacher and he could be the singer. And then I thought the Righteous Gemstones, which is entirely different kind of storytelling.
So the fascinating thing that I had never, ever heard of and is Jennifer Goodwin's character plays his first wife. I saw a lot of videos when I started doing research that there were some people that felt that maybe she was a mixed race. But then I felt like I got a very determined or like a definite in a video with her children that she was Italian.
Yeah. Okay. So couple things with that.
Yeah.
Three things. Thing one, Gates Fellows thing. It was shown that both Johnny and...
You mean Lewis Gates?
Yeah.
Henry Lewis Gates.
Yeah, that guy. The both Johnny's side and then I think her side there, I think they show that there was some African genes in there.
Oh, okay.
Two, as I know personally, people in the South like to make up all sorts of things for people of mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
And three, in my family of origin, for some reason, black people were called Italians at one point.
Oh.
And so I just thought it was them teasing me, but maybe that was another thing like Cherokee. Maybe that was a euphemism in the South for people of mixed race. Oh, no, no, he's just a swarthy Italian.
Because her last name, and now I don't, I'm not
the one photo I saw of her was not conclusive, but I think it was conclusive that in Arkansas in the 30s and 40s, you probably did not advertise if you were mixed race.
Right. Her first name was Vivian, but now I can't find her. It did have a very Italian sounding name.
Sure.
And I, like I said, I found different videos that one was saying that she was of mixed race, and there were many issues. Like people started to turn on Johnny because of it. Cause this was like, I think now in the 50s and the 60s. Yeah. And so racial tensions were high. And so a mixed race couple was not welcomed in most places in the South where he played. And so he did deal with some racism through his wife. And I want like the doc, in fact, there is a documentary and I'll put it in the show notes. I want to watch it at some point about his first wife, about Vivian.
Okay.
And so Johnny Cash's second oldest daughter with his first wife, Vivian, walked out of a family screening of this film 5 times. She felt that Phoenix and Witherspoon's performances were Oscar worthy, but that her mother, Vivian, was cast in an unfair light. She also didn't feel that there were enough scenes of him interacting with his children, which I understand that from a child's point of view that you don't like that, but
right.
That's not what is going to make this story.
Well, and the story, there's from the show Don't Tell, he comes in at one point and his first wife is making lunches and she says, Cindy doesn't like mustard. Which that one line tells the viewer that he is detached from his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bit later, they argue about him being on tour all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So she may be upset with that portrayal, but certainly the film definitely was showing that he spent a lot of time away from his family.
And so her half-brother, John Carter Cash, so obviously June's son, he was an executive producer on the film and he was asked about her reaction. And he responded by saying that the movie was intended to tell the love story between his mother and father, right. Not her mother
right.
and father.
And it's interesting that she said that because I don't feel like Jennifer Goodwin's portrayal or the way that character was shown in the film was negative to her. I think it was to him.
Right. She was the victim of.
Yeah.
And that's why I said like, you know, kind of like a star that flew too close to the sun.
Sure.
I felt like she was the victim because she was with him before he was anybody. He was a door-to-door salesman and not very right. good one. And she was dealing with all of the troubled part of living maybe with an artist, let's say, you know, when they're trying to be up and coming and they're not right. making any money. And she didn't get the benefit of being with him when he was making tons of money and touring.
Right.
They definitely did kind of touch on that he was, you know, he was a ladies' man. Like, even when he was with June.
Right.
He strayed.
I think of Chris Rock's famous joke about availability, right?
Mm.
That I think everyone has their foibles or their weaknesses, but when you are famous and rich, that exacerbates them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it magnifies the contrast in the image.
You're saying it's easy to be faithful if nobody's knocking on your door?
Yeah. Or to flip that around, it's harder to be faithful when you're on the road and attractive people come physically grab you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's an excuse, but I'm just saying it's different. The average person doesn't have access to boatloads of oxy. But if you did, you know, being weak is more of has more consequence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think he was, you know, obviously a complex character and maybe even a flawed man. But I think we should view the character with some sympathy, which I think mm-hmm. Mangold and Phoenix do,
mm-hmm.
given both his upbringing and kind of the circumstances.
Yeah,
so this film did a good job of that.
Mm-hmm. And it took producers 4 years to secure the rights. And then once they did, it took them another 4 years to get the film made. So this was quite the undertaking. What did you think of his costumes? Joaquin Phoenix wears 56 different costumes. All were designed by Adrian Phillips, who followed meticulous research within the Cash's family archives and fans' private collections. But for the most part, I feel like I know him most from that black shirt that he wore at Folsom Prison.
I would have to defer to Phillips on everything else because I, in my mind's eye, can't think of Johnny Cash except all in black. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of the first one that did that, mm-hmm. right? To me, I remember they said Travis Tritt got some flack because he didn't want to wear a cowboy hat. He wanted to wear a ball cap or no hat. And people were like, that's not the uniform. Well, I think at the time Johnny Cash was singing, there is also a very specific uniform, the mother of pearl buttons and, you know, the kind of buckaroo look. So that was a little bit different. But yeah, to me, none more black. It's just all black.
Anything else that you want to talk about this film? Like the cinematography stand out to you or?
So with the cinematography, I felt like it was a very clean look and very saturated colors. But it opens with a Steadicam shot of them going into the prison. And it's not one super long take, but it reminded me of some other famous opening shots. Like, is it Casino? Where they go through like the back kitchen, you know.
Yeah, I love that shot.
So very much, they're very soon there. He's in that wood shop and there's a shot of a cup of water and the ripples. And it's obviously a nod to Jurassic Park. And it kind of bumped me, actually.
You think?
Took me out of the film. Yeah, Jurassic Park made that shot famous.
No, I know, but I guess Jurassic Park was before 2005.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so Jurassic Park kind of spoiled that shot, right? Because now whenever I see it, that's what I think of. There's some neat shots of him when he was a child using the road and the farm rows as leading lines. But I thought it was interesting from the category of show, don't tell. I really was surprised they left this. So there's a scene at the motel where there's obviously some sexual tension between Johnny and June, but they haven't yet proceeded. And so she's going to give him the billboard listing because he made it onto the billboard. And she turns around and bends over to get it out of her suitcase. And they hold on Reese's butt. And I'm pretty sure that's what Johnny was looking at when that happened. But I was kind of surprised that they left that in the edit. So
yeah, but if it was showing his POV.
Yeah, just like I guess maybe credit to Reese. She's like, let my butt show. But it's not the film didn't have a lot of that kind of stuff in it. But they had a lot of close-ups and even extreme close-ups, which I thought for a biopic is interesting because that really runs the risk of people being taken out of, oh, that's not Johnny Cash, you know? Like if they were a long shot, it's a little easier for you to suspend disbelief. So again, credit to the actors for pulling that off.
That's really interesting you say that because I noticed that when they were on stage, we often didn't see a wide from the audience's point of view, like the distance that would be there. We were right up on stage with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that was obviously purposeful to kind of show,
making it a little bit more intimate, I think.
And you're seeing the interaction between them. And so you're seeing the subtle facial expressions that she's giving when he is sometimes being inappropriate, sometimes being, you know.
Right.
I mean, like when.
Quit clutching on me.
What, like when he proposed to her.
Right.
And so to see that from the very intense.
Right.
Point of view rather than the audience's point of view.
Which, and by contrast, right, in The Rose, they had a lot of deep, long, wide shots to show her as a small performer in this giant space, you know, the giant crowd. Mm-hmm. So excellent point on your part because it was more about John and June, their relationship, than it was about the performer.
Them as performers.
Yeah. So again, our friend who did Ford v Ferrari.
Yeah.
Mr. Papa Michael. Good job.
Yep. Was there any head trauma in this film?
I did not notice any head trauma. At one point, June throws beer bottles at them, empties, but I think everybody ducks.
I loved that scene.
I will mention though, one guitar was definitely harmed. So I don't know if that counts as head trauma.
Yeah. Isn't there, let's see, a guitar has hips, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. There's a neck, so presumably the head would be the top part. So there was head trauma. Thanks for helping me land that.
There you go. And a smoochie.
Smoochie, smoochie, smoochie. There's an almost smoochie in the motel where we talked about the butt shot. And then there is a smoochie after they finally get together and consummate the relationship. Mm,
boom, chicka, wow, wow. How about a driving review?
So
one tractor took a spill.
Yeah. I didn't make note or research the what kind of tractor that was, but the colors look John Deere.
John
to me.
Deere, I would agree.
So if Uncle Fred were here, he might be able to tell us the specifics. You'll notice growing up, Johnny Cash's family has a 1930 Ford Model A, and the Model A, right, like the Model T before it, was very much the affordable everyman car. They sold a gazillion of them, but that was very much a tool. So they were not rolling in the money, which we already knew. I loved the line in there, Jerry Lee, sit your ass down. So that was good safety in the film, even diegetic safety. Right. That gets credit. When he comes back from rehab, the black 64 Cadillac Fleetwood that drops him off looks like a hearse. I thought that was great car casting.
Car casting.
And then lastly, he has a bronze 63 Cadillac convertible. That's a really nice ride for a recovering addict. So he rocked around some nice Cadillacs back mm-hmm. in the day. Good job, Johnny.
When you said Jerry Lee, it would be problematic dealing with his marital status, but do we need to do Great Balls of Fire because of the one scene that I absolutely love with Alec Baldwin?
Perhaps so. It has been ages since I've seen that. Dennis Quaid and Winona Ryder?
Yep.
Very good on my part.
Oh my gosh, I've seen that movie so many times.
Right. Yeah, I do remember some quotes from it. So maybe we need to put that in the hat for 2025.
Well, it's going to have like a giant disclaimer on the beginning. Like, this podcast does not condone the marital relations between those underage.
Yeah. If we ever review Priscilla, we'll have the same warning.
Oh, my goodness. Luckily, June was of age.
As far as we know.
As far as we know, I suppose. All right, shall we go to the numbers?
Let's go to the numbers.
Okay, couple things before I give you the hard numbers. The film was screened for the inmates of Folsom Prison 38 years after Johnny Cash's landmark performance.
Was there anybody that saw both?
Right. There could have been, I don't know. It was the biggest grossing musical biopic until Straight Outta Compton in 2015. And somebody else was not a fan of this film. Roseanne Cash, Johnny's daughter, was not a fan of the film, saying it was like having a root canal without anesthetic.
Ouch.
So she was not a fan.
I'm going to say 1 out of 10 on IMDb from her.
Yeah. The budget was $29 million. It brought in domestically about $120 million. Worldwide, it brought in $187.7 million, and adjusted for today, that would be like $193.3 million. So I remember, I mean, it got, let's see.
Some Oscar noms.
It did. Let me finish with the numbers, and then I'll go into the awards. It gets a 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb. Critics gave it 82%. Audiences liked it a bit more at 90%. And I remember that. Like, it was a big hit that year. For people, it is over 2 hours at 2 hours 16. It is rated PG-13 and it is labeled a biography drama music film. Reese won, while Joaquin, the editor, the costume designer, and the sound mixers were nominated that year for the Oscar. And Reese and the sound mixers won a BAFTA. The film, as well as Joaquin and Reese, also won a Golden Globe that year.
I would have to say I would give the award to Joaquin over Reese. Sorry, I thought he did a fantastic performance.
Yeah, no, he did a great job. And he, like, you know, he just immerses himself into the, you know, when he gets ready for a film. So he is just an amazing, amazing actor. Mm-hmm. I definitely have a lot of respect for him. Okay, so that should do it. We watch this on Max, so if you already subscribe to Max, you can also watch Walk the Line without paying an additional fee. And, oh, we better see what we're watching next week.
Drumroll, please. The Sixth Sense. I see movies.
That's a good line. All right. Everybody have a great weekend and never forget.
Dodges never stop and neither do the movies.
Thanks for listening to Dodge Movie Podcast with Christy and Mike Dodge of Dodge Media Productions. To find out more about this podcast and what we do, go to dodgemediaproductions.com. Subscribe, share, leave a comment, and tell us what we should watch next. Dodges never stop and neither do the movies.